This is a kind of prayer or affirmation, so I thought a good way to begin would be to read this together, and then I'm going to be working with this each day. It's kind of a morning offering, and so I would really encourage you to do the same. If you can work with this each day, you'll see how it goes hand in glove with our topic, which is learning more about love and how to show it. So, everybody now have one? Okay. I say yes to everything that happens to me today as an opportunity to give and receive love without reserve. I am thankful for the enduring capacity to love that has come to me from the Sacred Heart of the universe. May everything that happens to me today open my heart more and more. May all that I think, say, feel, and do express loving kindness toward myself, those close to me, and all beings. May love be my life purpose, my bliss, my destiny, the richest grace I can receive or give. And may I always be especially compassionate toward people who are considered least or last, or who feel alone or lost. Well, thank you for joining me in that. And this topic of love, beginning from a prayer, really shows us a lot about what it means. It comes from the spiritual energy that's in every person. And this spiritual energy is a capacity to love. And if we say that God is love, then it's a God capacity within us. And I respect you all. I admire you for coming to a class like this, like taking time aside to look at the subject of love, because it's one that we don't always pay great attention to. We just kind of take it for granted. So I'm glad that we want to focus together for these 5 weeks on this topic. It's you couldn't have a more wonderful or beautiful subject to look at. And I'd like to say right at the beginning that I don't come from a place of being an expert at loving. I didn't learn what it took to write the book by observing how I myself love. I learned from those who loved me. And this is an important part of what I see as the practice of love. That whenever someone loves you, and you can tell when someone loves you because you feel it in your body, and that is what we imitate, we act toward others in the loving ways that they act toward us. Because we didn't come into the world already knowing how to love. We came in with the capacity to give and receive it, but we didn't know how to do it. We learned how to do it by observing the way our parents or any family member or eventually other people showed that they loved us. This is how we learned it. It's not something that you can learn like reading, writing, and arithmetic. It's more of an experience. So this is our basic topic, and I feel very honored, and I have a sense of the sacred as I approach this topic. So I just want you to know that, and that is where we begin. If you do have the book with you, I'd like to, you can read along. This is the book, How to Be an Adult in Love, and I'm going to just read the first couple of paragraphs in the introduction. So I'm on page Roman numeral 13, which is XIII, for those who don't have the classical training. So I begin with a quotation from Emily Dickinson. This is from one of her letters. I scarcely know where to begin, but love is always a safe place. Meant in two senses. It's a safe place to begin. And if it's real love, it will always be safe. This little life of ours rests between a longing to be loved and a calling to show love. These two stunning possibilities, so tender, so fugitive, are the subject of these pages. I must admit, however, that this is mostly a book of guesses, as any book on love must be. My guess is that loving is what we are here for, that love is what every one of us deserves to receive and is here to give, that love alone makes this earth the heaven it was meant to be. The guess turns into a conundrum when we realize that so many of us prefer the signs that point to heaven over heaven itself. We yearn for and talk about the love we want. We lament the love we have been deprived of, yet sometimes we fail to take the steps that can help it happen for us. The puzzle becomes even more confounding when we sometimes prefer the hell of no love at all, which we bring on by our own unskillful choices or by our endurance of abuse or betrayal, especially from those who say they love us. This book proposes that love is real when we dare to become as loving as we can be toward ourselves and others, and as careful as we can be not to confuse a history with someone or a connection that does not work for true love. So there I make the connection between love and relationship and what has been called codependency, in which you stay in something that really hurts you. And we always go back to our statement from Emily Dickinson, if it's real love, it will always feel safe. It won't feel like you're putting up with something. It won't feel like somebody is hurting you and you have to endure it because you hope that things might change in the future. So we're going to be paying some attention to that part of it. But I want to share one other quotation, because our topic will be, what is love? That's our topic today. Then next week we will go on to how do we love ourselves. Then we'll be going to how do we love people in relationship. And then how do we love all beings. And finally, how do we love God. So to bring that part of it into our opening statements here, I want to give this wonderful quote to you from Pope John the 23rd. He says, the greatest task of magnanimous people, big-hearted people, is to relate in a new way to other humans. This new way is the way of justice, love, and freedom. This is the task that leads to an authentic peace, and this is the calling of those who love. So right away, he's inviting us into a love that might be unusual because we were brought up to love our near and dear. And here he's saying, we have a bigger calling than that. We love our near and dear, and we also love, excuse me, far and wide. So we love our near and dear, but we also love far and wide. And when we work for a society that will be just and loving and free, he calls that purpose a loving purpose. So I'm very impressed with this. And it's a far cry from our childhood purpose, which was to save our own souls. That now sounds kind of old-fashioned. It's hard even to know what a soul is. But when what religion is really about is to bring about a world of justice, peace, and love, then we have a bigger sense of ourselves and what love is about. So as we go through the book and these discussions, we will keep coming back to this wonderful, bigger sense of what love is about. Okay, so as we go along, I'll check in with you for questions, but if you do have a question along the way before I check in, please let me know. So when I first started writing, I said to myself, well, I'm going to have to do what I did in grammar school, find the lowest common denominator. What is the most basic feature of love? I gave it some thought, and I came up with the word connection. And I thought, well, can I then just simply say love is connection? And this was early April, a couple of years ago, and I was thinking about April 15th. And I said to myself, well, wait a minute. I have a connection to the IRS. And this connection, I wouldn't really call it love. It feels more like obligation. So then this is not the lowest common denominator. I'm going to have to add something. So I added caring connection. When you're connected in a caring way, that is love. And of course, this caring connection would show itself in the various choices you make about how you're going to be with someone else and the commitment you make to someone. So the choices and commitments will show what kind of a caring connection you have. So does this seem like a good working definition for us to begin with, as far as you're concerned, this idea of a caring connection? Anybody have anything to add or ideas about it? Okay, so let's take this as something we can work with. And this word connection, of course, comes from Latin, which means to join together. And in the old spelling of it, it was spelled like this, C-O-N-N-E-X-I-O-N, because it's related to the Latin word nexus, which, of course, means a joining together. So the word itself is full of this kind of energy of adjoining a sense that we are somehow the same, or we are one with each other. And if you look at this carefully, you realize that to say that I'm one with others means there is no more top to bottom, high to low. There's no more we are the ones who are better than others and you are the ones who are not as good as we are. There's no hierarchy. We are up here and we know how everything is supposed to work and we will tell you and then you obey. And in order for this to happen, in order for us to cancel the one down, one up, one high, one low, and so forth, we would have to be tremendously open and tremendously inclusive. So already we see that there's something about being able to love that has to do with how we make room for everyone and how no one is excluded. Does this make sense to everybody? So I'm going to go with this as kind of a opening definition, and then as we go along, we'll see a lot more about how it all works. Now, the ancient Greeks had more than one word for love, because we say, I love lemon meringue pie, and I love New York. That isn't really love. That isn't a caring connection. That's a preference. That's an indicator of something that we enjoy and that we approve of. So, for instance, if you have children, you know that you always love them, but you don't always like them. Because they're not always doing what you prefer that they do or what you find enjoyable. This makes sense? But the caring connection goes on. So the Greeks had the word philia. This is the love of friends. So Philadelphia, love of brother. In addition, there is eros, which is a love of relatedness and also includes a sexual connection, but it doesn't necessarily have to. It can be just a creative connection. They also had a word for family love, storge, storge. And then the word you've heard probably often is agape. This is the A-G-A-P-E. This is the selfless love that you might feel toward everyone. Of course, in ancient times, pre-Christian times, the agape was the love of your fellow members of the city-state. They had no concept, if you were an Athenian, agape meant you loved all Athenians. It did not mean you also love Spartans. It was Christianity that brought the idea of agape is not just about loving your neighbors, your fellow citizens. It's about loving all beings. That's a big change. And that's how we look at it now. So by making these distinctions, they're showing us that you will demonstrate the kind of love you have in a variety of ways. One way might have more bodily energy to it, like eros. Philia has more of the unconditional caring about a person who's a true friend. Storge is about a family type of love. It's unconditional in the sense that it's always happening, but there are many times when it becomes dramatically difficult to express or even feel. So this is a very complex one. And then agape would be a spiritual victory that happened in you because somehow you moved out of your ego. These three, eros, philia, and storge, all come from the part of us that is the separate individual personality, and then the agape comes from the spiritual dimension of ourselves, which is bigger than any individual. So, questions about this part? Everybody follow so far? Good. Now, this love that we feel, I have described before as being shown by five different A's. So I'll just briefly mention this for those who aren't aware of it. You show your caring connection to someone by paying attention to this person. So this word in Latin, the T-E-N-T, means to stretch. So you stretch from beyond yourself to focus on someone else. The A-T means toward. You've stretched towards someone. That's attention. And what are you paying attention to? You're paying attention to the feelings and the experiences that this other person has. Secondly, you accept someone just as he or she is, rather than demanding that someone be what you need them to be. Third, you appreciate or value someone. The P-R-E-C is from the Latin word for price. So a person is of great price to you. You show affection in physical ways when you love someone. So in all of the different kinds of love, in the philia and the eros, you show the love physically but differently. So in the erotic part, you might show it in a sexual way if that's appropriate, but in friendships they usually don't include, now they have friends with benefits, I know, but for us old timers, it's the friends don't include the sexual part, but they do include, you know, hugging or arm around the shoulder, that kind of thing. And of course, within the family, there is not the sexual style, but there's a lot of holding and cuddling, etc. And then finally, you show love by allowing the other person to live in accord with his or her own needs and wishes, rather than imposing yours upon him. Now, these five A's, which I would say is our working definition of a caring connection, also happen to be the original needs that we came into the world with. So we were born with a need for attention. Someone had to know when we were hungry or needed to be changed or held. Somebody had to accept us as we are rather than trying to mold us into something else. Somebody had to cherish and value us enough that they took care of us. Someone had to show affection in physical ways, which even helps the brain develop, we now understand. And someone finally had to allow us to go when it was time to go. So when it was time to go to school, we had to have the kind of parents who let us go, not kept us home to fulfill their needs or controlled us. So we come in with these original needs, and these needs remain with us all our lives. And in adult life, they represent the needs in intimate or any type of close relationship. The needs that we came into the world with turn out to be the same needs that describe a healthy relationship. A healthy relationship is one in which the caring connection is shown between the partners through attention, acceptance, appreciation, affection, and allowing. And nature has it set up this way that you don't have a new set of needs in an adult relationship. You have the same ones that you had in childhood. Everybody follow? Tom?
Question, please. And I can test and make sure this works.
Okay.
I love this last issue, the allowing part. Hadn't thought of that before. But when you said it's something that allows someone to go, as it were, there's a French word that begins with a, adieu. It means goodbye. It means letting go. But it also has, I think, the word Dieu in it, which is God. I'm handing you over to God now. I've done the best I can. Maybe that's it.
Yes, I like that. Thank you. I didn't think of that. That's a beautiful way to put it. Someone else have a question on this part? How is the caring connection shown between humans in these five ways? It all began when we came into the world with these needs. Then later in life, we looked for someone who would fulfill the same needs for us. When these needs were not fulfilled in childhood, we leave childhood with a craving, not a desire, but a craving for them. And this is because when these needs are fulfilled, the result is the capacity to be satisfied with the appropriate amount that goes with our age. So when we're adults, we no longer need someone who will pay attention to us 24 hours a day, get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to feed us. We're not looking for that anymore. That would not be appropriate. If you want to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, go to the refrigerator on your own. Don't wake anybody up. So the capacity to be satisfied with less is the result of having the needs met originally. When the needs were not met originally, then whichever ones were not met leave a kind of bottomless pit, so that ever after we're seeking more and more, but we didn't receive the capacity to be satisfied. So no matter how much we get, we always want more. That's why it's a craving. And so when you come into a relationship with that bottomless pit, it won't feel so intimate. It'll feel like clinging, trying to get something from another human who probably is trying to get the same thing from you. And so it leads to distress, problems, as some of us have found out in the course of life. So the intimate relationships thrive when there's a capacity to be satisfied with just the appropriate amount. And this caring connection is the centerpiece of it all. I show that I care about you, and I show that I'm connected to you in the same way that your parents were supposed to offer, but in a much more moderate dosage. So this will be an important feature of what our life will be about. And if we didn't have the needs met originally, we will also feel a grief reaction because we instinctively knew that we were supposed to get these 5 A's, and when they weren't given to us, it felt like a loss. And when you feel a loss, then your body wants to grieve the loss and move on. But the ego doesn't like the idea of grieve and move on. It prefers substitute, find somebody else who will give me what I missed. Then I won't have to grieve. Everybody follow? I'm thinking of this poem by Emily Dickinson that expresses this, because it seems as if she felt something like this. And so she did, in the beginning of the poem, she describes her childhood. And then, as you'll see, she talks about the grief. And then she talks about how she went out and looked for what was missing and what she discovered from that. It's very powerful, and I think you will appreciate what she's trying to say. The word abroad in this poem, since it was written in Civil War times, abroad in that era meant outside your house. Go abroad meant go outside, not go to Europe. Okay? Hold on 1 second. I'm just going to give the poem and then I'll... A loss of something ever felt I. The first that I could recollect, bereft I was of what I knew not. Too young that any should suspect, a mourner walked among the children. I, notwithstanding, went abroad as one bemoaning a dominion, herself the only prince cast out. Elder today, a session wiser, and fainter too as wiseness is, I find myself still softly searching for my delinquent palaces. And a suspicion touches my forehead now and then that I am looking oppositely for the sight of the kingdom of heaven. Kingdom of heaven is within you. So when I'm out there looking, when I went abroad looking for the palace that I was supposed to be brought up in, the delinquent palace, the palace that never really happened, when I'm looking for that outside, then I'm looking in the wrong direction, because I need to look within first. What is within? The capacity to give myself the attention, etc., the 5 A's. And when I give these to myself, then I make up for what was missing, and then I can give them to someone else. So this is such an important feature of our topic about love, that we have to trust the capacity inside. That's what's meant by the kingdom of God is within you. And the real word in the New Testament is the kingdom of God is among you. So the love is everywhere, basically. Jim?
Does this bottomless pit that results from not receiving one of those 5 A's as a child explain the infidelity and wandering eye that many men and some women have?
Yes,
they can't get enough.
That's the craving. Yeah, it's an insatiability, because you're not being insatiable because you're a bad person. Insatiability is the result of not being satiated originally. It just automatically happens that you wind up insatiable. It's like the negative result of not being loved in the full colors that humans have come to understand love to be. That you love me when you really pay attention to my words and my experience and my feelings. You love me when you accept me rather than try to change me or reject me. You love me when you value me rather than just see me as, like I kind of felt when I was growing up, my parents saw the three of us children as obligations. Like we just had to be taken care of, and they were very responsible in taking care of us. But I could tell that they weren't enjoying us. They were just dealing with us on a daily basis, doing their job. Everybody understand what I mean? And that the affection will be important. Being Italian, I got plenty of that. And the allowing is, can you... is it okay to have your own thoughts, your own beliefs, your own way of looking at the world, and your own way of being in the world? This is where Catholicism fell short. Because they were clearly outlining how you were supposed to see things, how you were supposed to believe, how you were supposed to act. And on top of it all, if you didn't act in these ways, you might wind up in hell for all eternity. So it was a kind of a big deal. I was thinking the other day that in my own life, I can actually say that working through and finally resolving my experience of Catholicism has been a bigger task than working through and resolving my issues with my parents. I don't know if anybody else feels this way, but I did notice it about myself. It just occurred to me a day or two ago. I thought, wow, look how long it's taken me to make this move to find a way of being Catholic in the world, meaning universal, inclusive, that's different from the way it was explained to me in St. Patrick's Church, New Haven, Connecticut. It's been a big change. And I don't blame them for it. I understand how it was back then. But when we don't make this move, we never find the beauty that's in our faith. John?
Dave, back to infidelity and maybe other categories of missing needs. It begs the question that it may be true, if it is true, that men are more wandering than women, is there some kind of connection with the concept of parenting that affects men, boys, more than women? I just offer that.
Okay, good question. So let's take a quick look at that, because it does help us with our concept of caring connection. So, and this is from a traditional point of view. From a traditional point of view, the male archetype, what is an archetype? A long-standing energy in humanity that is transcultural. In other words, it appears in all cultures and nations in every century. When there's something like that, something that keeps appearing as a feature of the way humans are, that's called an archetype. That energy is called archetypal energy. So the archetype of the male has had more to do with go on the journey, find the Holy Grail, go out into the world, whereas the standard female, and again, I'm speaking traditionally, so this doesn't apply to everyone in this day and age, has been stay at the hearth, caring for the children, and it doesn't have the go energy in it the way the male archetype does. This happens to fit psychologically also, because the mother energy, shall we say, is about providing the holding environment where you do have your first experience of safety and security in the arms of mother being nursed, and you feel safe and secure. Only the female can provide that. Then it's the father figure who takes you outside to play baseball, or takes you out somewhere, or shows you a wider world. So again, it has this what will take me out of the safe holding environment of home. So the female, the heart, the caring, the holding environment leads to the sense of comfort, whereas the male, the go, leads to the sense of a challenge. But this doesn't work very well in an intimate relationship when it's taken literally, so that the men believe it's perfectly okay to keep going out as opposed to remain faithful to the hearth and the experience of the holding environment. So that would be like a shall we say, taking it too literally? Everybody following me? And I remember this as the actual style in my childhood, because I was brought up mostly with my grandparents, and the day consisted of, they got up in the morning, they had breakfast, not the kind of breakfast we have now, but anyway, just coffee and roll. And then Grandpa would take off, going God knows where. And he wouldn't be back till lunch, which of course Grandma had ready on the table, as was expected. And when lunch was over, he didn't clean up. He took a nap, and then he left again. And he didn't come back till that evening, when she was once again expected to have dinner on the table. After dinner, he left again. And he came back around 10, and they went to bed. That happened every single day. So, of course, I thought to myself, oh, men, go. And you go wherever you want. You don't have to explain. He never said where he was going. Or he never talked about where he was. And nobody ever asked him. So he was kind of taking this very literally and making use of it, shall we say. Whereas the feeling of comfort came. And it's very normal for us men to associate comfort with the female rather than the male. And this was even true on a religious level, because the Virgin Mary offered the comfort, whereas the God archetype has more to do with you better do what I say or else. You'll be rewarded if you follow my commandments, but you'll be punished if you don't. That energy was not in Mary. Her energy was, I love you no matter what. So it was unconditional. These are now prejudices when we take them literally. They only help us when we try to understand what being human has been like. Does it have to keep being like this? No. It's up to us to design it in a way that fits for everyone. Does everybody follow this? Other questions about this? Okay. Well, it's 11, so let's take our short break, about 10-15 minutes, and then we will come back here.